In the last year, we began the Mishnah on the Daf, Peches Amid Aleph, and we got up to Peches Amid Beis midway through the Mishnah. Let's just review the basic highlights of the Mishnah, the first half of the Mishnah on Peches Amid Aleph. We're talking about the requirement in the Torah of Ma'ozne Tzedek, of having weights and scales that are precise. And the Torah commands us to have maznayim or ma'uznei tzedek. These are weights. And what they do is they put the merchandise on one side of the scale, and they put stones, little avonim, on the other side of the scale. And it's critical that both sides of the scale are equal. And then the Torah speaks about Avnei Tzedek. Those are the avonim that are used to weigh down the merchandise on one side of the scale with the merchandise on the other side of the scale. And the weight of these stones has to be precise. The Torah also speaks about Ephas Tzedek. Ephah is a kind of utensil that's used by a seller to measure out a certain volume of dried goods like flour or spices. And again, the Torah requires that the measurement be precise. It shouldn't be off. And the last case the Torah mentions is Hin Tzedek, which is again a utensil that the seller uses in this case to weigh out volumes of liquid substances like wine and oil. And the Torah tells us, with regard to all these different categories of what we call midos and mishkolos, measurements and weights or scales, that they all have to be tzedek. They have to be perfectly precise. And if there's a pagam in the use, then the Mishnah wants to know what you do in such a case. How do you avoid any sort of pagam, imprecision on the part of the midos and the mishkolos? The Mishnah speaks about a siton, and if you recall, we mentioned that the word siton either is translated as wheat, that's the Rashbam's pshat. The Marsha doesn't understand that because we're talking specifically in our Mishnah about liquids. Wheat is a solid, and therefore he quotes the Aruch that the word siton means a seller of oil. As similar pshat we see in Rabbeinu Gershon, Tosfos mentions that the language of siton, the term siton, is used specifically for the sale of liquids. And the Ritva agrees to the Rashbam that siton is a reference to wheat, but he says it's a borrowed term that's used for any sort of sellers that are selling masses amount of volumes, whether it be volumes of wheat, of oil, of wine. And the Mishnah says that the requirement of the siton is mekaneach midosav. So again, the siton is purchasing from the balabais, and we'll go over these terms. The balabais is the owner of a treasure house of produce. He may have olives, grapes, to make wine, oil. He sells them to the siton. The siton, who's that middleman, buys masses of volumes from different balabatim who are selling from their otzros. And he, the siton, sells these masses of volumes to chenvani, to the storekeepers. The chenvani is the one who buys from the siton and sells to many different people. The balabais sells a great vast amount of volume, but on one occasion. And it's only what we call occasional, mizman, mizman. The Siton, on the other hand, sells very frequently. He buys from many different balabatim and sells to many different storekeepers, many different chenvonim. And each sale, each purchase and each sale on the part of the Siton is a massive value, a kamus gedola, a quantity that exceeds that of what the chenvoni is buying. The chenvoni, although he is selling on a more regular basis, that's called tidirut, but nevertheless, this storekeeper is selling smaller amounts to various customers that are buying. And the chenvoni is someone who is involved in sale all the time. B'choleis u b'choleis. Now, all these different dinim will be reflected in the requirements of these different categories, the Baal Bayis, the Chenvoni, the Siton, with regard to the precise measurements and weights and the requirements of guaranteeing that they are precise. Therefore, the Mishnah addresses itself first and foremost to the Siton, that as a result of the fact that he is purchasing masses of amounts, selling them in broken down smaller amounts, he's got to be mekaneach midosav. He has to make sure that his weights are absolutely clean. Lekaneach means lenakos, to clean them, because there's a certain amount of liquids that get stuck to the scales, and as a result, the scales are no longer precise. He's got to clean out that residue of liquids that get stuck to the scales. And how frequently does the mission require that the Siton clean out his measurements? Once in every 30 days. Because since, again, he's selling a lot, there's going to be a lot of mashke, because of this large volume of liquids, that is stuck to the walls of the kelim. The Baal Bayis, on the other hand, who sells much less frequently than the Siton, therefore, the amount of liquids that get stuck to his kelim is much more limited than the volume in the parallel case of the Siton, and it's sufficient for the Baal Bayis, therefore, to clean out his scales once every year, once every 12 months. And again, the reason for this is because the measures that are used for liquids, although they leave a residue, and again, we spoke about shemen and yayin, nevertheless, after the liquids are measured out in these measuring utensils, then they're poured into the buyer's container, his receptacle. Now, the residue will settle and congeal. So that word congeal, which in Hebrew is called likrosh, is going to cause a situation in which the measures are no longer precise, and therefore the measures must be cleaned out periodically. In the case of the wholesaler, who's selling very frequently, and he tends to sell masses of volumes, therefore his measure will gather residue quickly, and therefore he's got to clean out his measures frequently. That's the case of the Siton. However, in the case of the Baal Bayis, and he's just selling from time to time, the amount of residue that gathers and might congeal in his measures is very limited, and therefore the householder, this Baal Bayis, has to clean his measure only once in 12 months, and that's the shita here of the Tanakhama. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that everything is the reverse. And why is that so? And the answer is because, according to the logic of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, And this is the way the Rashbam presents it here. Dibra Maschil Chiluf, if you get a chance to look at that Ramban, that Rashbam, is that the Sitton, this middleman, who otherwise is called a wholesaler, since he sells on a regular basis and he uses his utensils constantly, there's no chance for the liquid to pile up, so to speak, and congeal and get stuck to the walls of the keli. And therefore, it's enough, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, for the Sitton to clean out his measurements once a year. The Baal Bais, on the other hand, who doesn't sell on a regular basis, after every measurement, will allow some residue of liquid to get stuck and to congeal in his kalim. He has to clean out his measurements once every 30 days, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Meiri is upset with this pirush of the Rashbam, because if the logic of the Rashbam is because of the tedirus of the Sitton, and therefore there's not enough time for the liquid to congeal, then it would make sense that Rav Shimon Gamliel should argue with the Tanakhama even in the next statement in the Mishnah regarding the Chenvani, because the Chenvani sells even more frequently than the Sitton. He's got so many customers that come in and buy, and therefore he doesn't have to worry about a very, very frequent cleaning. So why didn't Rav Shimon Gamliel argue even in that case? So in order to answer the Biri's question and defend the Rashbam, we're going to have to see what the Mishnah says about Chenvani, which is the last thing we discussed in the previous shiur. But before we see that, let's suggest or present the Meiri's pshat here. According to the Meiri, Rav Shimon Gamliel is based on a different logic, and that is that since the Baal Bais sells only to one person, he's looking to sell his volume, his large, great volume to the Sitton. Therefore, any time that he measures things out, if it's not precise, then it's going to be an onah gedola. So again, even though it's infrequent, that medida, but the amount that he might be cheating because of that great volume is massive. But not so in the case of Sitton. According to the Meiri, since the Sitton is going to be selling and measuring for many different chenvanim, then the onah, the overcharging as a result of imprecise measurements, is fractional. It's limited. And therefore, there's not such a frequent need, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, of cleaning out his measurements. In any event, we're going to continue with the Mishnah and interpret it the way the Rashbam understands the Mishnah. In the case of a chenvani, the Mishnah says, Mekaneach midosav, he's got to clean out his measurements, pamayim b'shabbos, twice a week. And why is that? So the Rashbam explains that we had the Mishnah earlier on Daf Pei Zayin that the Mishnah requires in two out of three cases what we call Achiyat Fit Yitaftenu Sholosh Tipos, meaning that in the cases of both the Baal Bais and the Sitton who are selling liquids, they have to first tip over or pour over the liquids into the receptacle of the buyer until they empty out that liquid. But after that, they have to continue pouring to make sure that they get three more drops and the barrel is completely empty and the lokech is receiving everything that was in the barrel. In the case of the chenvani, the Mishnah establishes that he's patur. There was a special takana be'ef the chenvani because he's tarud b'lukuchosav. We can't make him waste that precious time of standing and pouring squeezing out another three drops. And if that be the case, then it makes sense that the kalim, the measurements of the chenvani, are backlogged with a lot of those tipos, a lot of those drops of liquid that in the other case of the Baal Bayis and the Siton, we got rid of them by continuing pouring out those last three tipos. In the case of the Chenvoni, those three tipos are still there in the embedded, if you will, in the walls of the measurement, and therefore he, the Chenvoni, requires a constant, twice weekly, cleaning of his kelim. That's the way the Rashbam learns this pshat. And if that be the case, we answer the question of the Meiri on the Rashbam, because the reason why Rav Shimon Gamliel doesn't argue against this principle in the Chenvoni is because Rav Shimon Gamliel would also accept that premise, that principle that applies to the special leniency that the Chachamim is saking with regard to the Chenvoni because of his tirda b'lukuchosav, that he doesn't have to pour in the extra three tipin, and therefore the Chenvoni is going to have to be constantly cleaning out his measurement. The Rashbam initially offers a different explanation of Chenvoni and why the Mishnah requires that the Chenvoni is mekaneach pamayim b'shabbos, and he says hol v'chenvoni mocher yoser min asiton. The Chenvoni is actually selling larger volumes than the Siton, and therefore there's more of a backlog, a residue of these mashkim in his measurements, and therefore he has to constantly, twice weekly for to be precise, clean out these, you know, his measurements. The Rashbam rejects this pshat because if that be the case, Rav Shimon Gamliel should have argued in the case of Chenvoni, because the logic of Shimon Gamliel is that someone who sells B'tadirus on a constant basis so frequently, he doesn't have to clean out his kelim on such a frequent basis because there's very little residue that's backlogged and congeals in the walls of his kelim. So the Rashbam would prefer the pshat that we gave before, which would justify, based on the fact that there was a takana for the Chenvoni, that he doesn't have to pour it for the three tipin and get rid of those three tipin, because that's something that even Rav Shimon Gamliel would accept. Then, on the bottom here of Peches Amud Aleph, the Mishnah says that Umamche Mishkalosav. Now, we're talking about the Chenvoni, and the Mishnah is continuing with the Chenvoni, that's the, you know, the storekeeper. And the Mishnah uses the word Mekaneach. Till now, we've been speaking. The Mishnah used the word mamche. Until now, the Mishnah has been using the word mekaneach. The Rashbam points out that the word mamche finds its source in Yeshaya Perek Chaf Hei, Umocha Hashem Dima Me'al Pnei Me'al Kol Ponim. And that's a real serious and thorough cleaning to get rid of something. And that's called mamche. Now, what exactly is the Chenvoni cleaning? Here we're talking about Mishkalosav. Until now we've been talking about Midosav. Midosav are measurements for liquids, for oil and wine. Now we're talking about cleaning out the Mishkolos, the weights. The weights themselves were those stones, if you recall, that we discussed that are placed on one side of the scale. And let's say, for example, if he's using these stones, these mishkolos, to weigh meat. So he's got meat on one side of the scale and these stones on the other side of the scale, and that's how he determines what the weight of the meat that he's selling is. The reason why, in the case of these mishkolos, these weights, we need the cleaning of the stones is because what happens quite often is that there's a shlichluch or a shuman, there's some sort of oily, fatty substance that attaches itself to the avonim, to the stones. And that's going to affect the weight of the stones. They're no longer precise. And the way that the Yad Ramah explains this, what is the mechanics of this lichluch and shuman on the stones, is he says the following. He gives the following scenario. He says, often the meat that he wants to weigh out for sale on one part of the scale has to weigh 3/4 of a litra. Litra is a sizable, significant amount of meat. So what he does is he has an oven on the other side, which is a litra, a standard weight of a stone. Now, on the basar side, he wants to get it to the point where it equals out to the litra, but minus 1/4, because he's only selling 3/4 of a litra. So what he does is, on the side of the basar, he adds another small stone, which only weighs a rev of a litra. And as a result, the stone and the basar are on the same side of the scale. That's why the stone gets oily and dirty and has to be cleaned. The Mishnah establishes it has to be cleaned once a week. And this chashash that we're worried about, that there will be a nidbak shuman habasar, and it will make the stones more weighty, leads the Meiri to raise the following question. Why is the seller have to be concerned about the extra weight to the stones because of the lichluch that's dovuk to the stones? He says, on the contrary, the one who's going to gain from this imprecise measurement or weight is the lokeach, the buyer. And why is that so? Why is the buyer going to end up with more merchandise? The answer is because he's going to have to put the merchandise on the other side of the Mishkan. It's got the avonim, the stones on one side. He's going to have to balance out the avonim. The weightier the balance is, the more he has to add of merchandise to balance the scale and sell it to the lokech. So at the end of the day, says the Miri, the lokech is the one who profits here as a result of the extra weight of the stones. So why is the Mishnah dictating this requirement of mamche mishkalosav? And the Meiri offers two answers. The first answer is that sometimes the chenvani will use these mishkalos when he buys from others. You know, it's because the chenvani not only sells, but he also has to buy in order to sell. And when he buys, he is going to measure out the merchandise that he's buying on his scales. And in this case, the mocher is going to lose because, since the merchandise is going to have to be heavier now to balance the heavier stones because of the lichluch davuk, therefore he's going to be cheating the sellers. Again, so the premise of the Miri's question was, on the contrary, the buyers who are purchasing from the chenvani are gaining by this extra weight of the stones. But now the Miri answers that we have to be concerned that these measurements, these mishkolos, are being used not just in the process of the chenvani selling, but also in the process of the chenvani buying, and in such a case, the extra weight will benefit the chenvani at the loss of the mocher, or cause a damage, a loss to the mocher. The second answer of the Meiri is that the Mishnah, the intention of the Mishnah is that if the chenvani desires or decides to clean out his mishkolos, he's allowed to do that once a week. And the chiddush that he's allowed, he's permitted to do so, is you might think that the kinuach rubs the oven so much that at the end of the day the oven becomes lighter and it doesn't reflect its true weight. And then again, he's cheating the lokeach. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Gneva Perek Ches that the reason for kinuach avnei mishkal v'maznayim is in order that they shouldn't get rusty as a result of the fatty substance, the liquid fatty substance that's dovuk b'hem. Because if they get rusty, then the Rambam says yischasru, that somehow, again, you have to know the physics of it, the chaluda, the rustiness, machasrosan, causes them to be less weighty, to be lighter. And therefore we understand very well, according to the Rambam, that if these avonim will weigh less, then there's going to be a hefsed to the lokeach, because the merchandise that's being measured and weighted on the other side of the avonim will be will be less, will be more limited, and then the lokeach, the buyer, is getting cheated out. The Mishnah continues and says, "Umekaneach maznayim al kol mishkal umishkal." Now we're talking about the scales, and you're going to put, let's say, basal lach on one side of the scale. I call mishkal, and mishkal means that after every single weighing, there's got to be a kinuach of the scales themselves. Because keep in mind, when you put the basal on the scale, now some of the shuman, you know, the oiliness of that basar, of that meat, is going to be added to the scale. Scales are made of these pans, and they have to be cleaned after each use. And the reason for that is because if you don't clean them after every time you weigh something, then the pans will retain some sort of residue of the oiliness, and they're no longer precise measurements. And that's called alkol mishkal umishkal. Now, the Rashbam adds that the pans themselves have a base kibul, and therefore, ein hamashke nishmach mehem, el nishar davuk. He says that because of the structure of, or the shape, if you will, of the pans of the scale, they have to be cleaned out, because there's going to be some sort of inaccurate measure as a result of the oiliness that's congealing in the pans of the scale. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we're not sure if he's coming to argue or coming to interpret the Mishnah, Bamedvar Mamurim, when is all this necessary? And we'll have to see what all this means. Is that's only belach, only with regard to things that have liquid elements to them. Of course, Yayin v'shemen is obvious, but even basar has a certain oiliness that we spoke about. Because in the case of something lach, there's going to be a certain residue of liquids that stick to the scales, and they're going to impact on the precision of the scales. Aval b'yavesh eino tzarech. If he has scales and measurements that are dedicated solely, exclusively to weighing dry substances, then, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, we don't have any problem of residue sticking to the scales. There's no process of congealment. And lo nidbak mi uma, nothing gets stuck. Now, this is the way the Rashbam understands it, that Rav Shimon Gamliel is referring to both measurements and weights. The Meiri, on the other hand, is of the opinion that Rav Shimon Gamliel is only referring to the law of kinuach hamidos, of measurements, and that's also the way the Tosfos Yontif learns it in the Mishnayos. And the Ramah, one of the Rishonim, holds that Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking only about mishkolos, about weights, and not about measures at all. The midos, the weights, have these pans, and even if there's dry material that's being weighed on the pans, then you still need to clean out whatever dry material might have been left as a residue. Now, we suggested that in the case of Dover Yavesh, Rav Shimon Gamliel insists that there's less of a need, of a pressing need for cleaning out these measurements and weights. Because, as the Rashbam says, in the case of Yavesh, lo nidbak mu'uma v'lo tzark l'nakos klal. So according to Rashbam's understanding of Rav Shimon Gamliel, in the case of weights that are designated for weighing dry material, dry goods, there's no need for kinuach whatsoever. But if you look at Rabbeinu Gershom, he writes in the case of Yavesh, of measurements that are used for dry materials, dry merchandise, nevertheless, you do need to clean them out, but litim krovot, but rather infrequently. Whereas in the case of liquids, the cleaning process is constant. There's also a shita, the Ri Karkusha, who's one of the Rishonim. He says that in the case of Yavesh, the reason why you don't need to be menake the measurements is because all you need is to remove the dust by blowing on it. So you don't need this process of cleaning it. The Bach in Choshen Mishpat writes that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, when he says Vamed Vamur Belach, he's not coming to disagree with the Tanakhama, but rather to explain the Tanakhama. But many Rishonim disagree with the Bach, and they understand that the Mishnah is recording a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel regarding the question whether Yavish needs to be cleaned out. According to Tanakhama, you need to clean out a Dovar Yavish as well. And in fact, the Rishonim seem to paskin like the Tanakhama. Take a look, for example, the Rambam in Perakhes Milchus Gnevi writes that the din of Kinuach is a requirement. The Rambam doesn't even specify, with no distinction whatsoever between dry goods and liquid merchandise. And it would seem that in both cases, he requires kinuach against Rav Shimon Gamliel, because according to the Rambam, there's a machlokas here between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel regarding Yavish. Now we're going to turn to Daf Peches Amid Beis. And let's just turn the page. And the Mishnah continues by saying, with regard to weighing and measuring, that Chayav Lachria lo tefach, which means lachria literally to tip the scale. So let's say, for example, he's got, let's say, these little stones on weighing down the scale on one side. He's got the meat on the other side. He's weighing the meat. Now he has to tilt the scale in such a way that the meat goes down one tefach. In other words, he's adding extra weight on the meat side until the kaf ha-maznaim goes down, it tilts a full tefach towards the side of the basar. And basically what we're saying here, and this is what Rabbeinu Gershom points out in his commentary, that if you're talking about foodstuff always has a certain element of psolus. Right, and if you buy meat, there's always going to be some fatty part of the meat that's not edible. So that what you want to do is you want to guarantee that the buyer gets his full value, and since that measurement includes within it psolus, we got to give him a little bit more, a little bit extra. And later on, we'll see on Daf Pei Test that the Braisa is going to clarify this din of hachra and apply it even to other things, not necessarily just to foodstuffs that have psolus. The Rashbam over there on Daf Pei Tes is going to learn that the law requiring this tilting an extra tefach only applies to macholim, whereas in other types of merchandise which are not edible, you need a hachra, but all you need is to tilt it just a little bit, and it doesn't have to be a full tefach. Now this din that when a person buys meat, he has a right to demand that the seller tip the scale so that the meat is a full tefach weightier, that only applies, says Rashi on the Rif. We don't have it Rashi here, and the Rashbam mentions it, in a massive amount of certain minimum quantity of meat. And that's called a litra of basar. If it's less than a litra of basar, then the remission doesn't require this hachra's tefach, because this hachra is going to be too much of a hachra for some limited amount of meat, a full tefach's worth. That's almost twice the amount of meat that he's buying. And this reappears amongst all the Rishonim. The Hagos HaShri says it. It's brought down in the Sma and Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat. But if you take a look at Tosus Divra Maschil Echad, you don't, at the top of Peches, you don't get that impression. It seems that no matter what quantity of meat the Lokech is buying, even if it's less than a litre, you still need this hachra. And Tosus quotes a Brisa later on in Daf Peites, where the Brisa talks about hachra on a reva litra, one quarter of a litra. And it would seem that that's equal to this din of hachra of a tefach. Now, one of the great achronim is the Taras Chaim. He raises the following objection with regard to the Rashbam. And he says the following, that the Mishnah, what we call Stimas Loshana Mishnah, writes the din of hachra as tefach without differentiating as to whether this din applies to a specific type of mishkal weight, or to all types of mishkalos. And if the Mishnah wanted to qualify itself the way the Rashbam insists to a litra of basa, why did the Mishnah omit that detail? Furthermore, he says that what the Rashbam insists, that in the case of pachos mi litra, the hachras tefah will be too much, and the lokeach will benefit too much at the expense of the buyer. He says then it really should depend upon the mishkal. And for example, if there were asara litrim, then maybe there should be achra of more than a tefach. Why is it that the Mishnah establishes an absolute requirement of a tefach that applies in every single case? It should be a function of, or relative to, the weight of meat that's being purchased by the buyer. Why is it that le'olam, as an absolute rule, there's only a requirement of achra of a tefach and nothing more than that? And based on these questions, the Toras Chaim says that even in a case of pachos mi-litra, there's a requirement of achras tefach. He basically presents the thesis that the achras tefach will always be relative to the amount of meat that you're weighing out. And therefore the tefach is a standard requirement and absolute, and it doesn't matter what size you use. It's always, the tefach is always going to be relative to the weight. So for example, he says that how much we have to add to 1 litra in order to be machriya tefach is exactly the same, again relative, to how much you would have to add to 10 litrim of basar in order to get that hachras tefach. The hachras tefach always remains standard, because it's always going to be a function of and relative to the amount of weight that you're putting on the other side of the scale. And this has to be studied really be'iyun. It's not for a daf yomi shia, but this is the thesis of the Toras Chaim, and the Achras Tefach applies umetum, straight across the board. Now, the Mishnah goes on to tell us that let's say he didn't do this achra of tefach at the time that he did the actual weighing down. And to explain why that is so, the Gemara later on has to be quoted, that the Gemara says that the law of achras tefach only applies in a makom shenagu kein. Everything reflects on the minigam makom. So what did he do? Hayashokel lo ayin bi'ayin, which literally translates in the following way. He was weighing, on behalf of the buyer, an evenly balanced scale. That's called ayin ba'ayin, which means hishva es shnei tzidei amaznayim. So the two sides of the scale were exactly balanced, perfectly balanced. V'shakalo b'diuk b'tzimtzum. So the weight was exact, because again, he's not being machriya tefach here. Is no say lo gerumin, then after the weight is done, when he gives to the buyer this particular volume, this particular weight, he's got to add a certain extra kamus, because again, he was not machriya tefach during the process of weighing. And the Mishnah says, how much of an addition of this gerumim does he have to add? Again, keep in mind that the word gerumim is miloshen achra vehatoya, like for example in Shechita there's halach of hagrama, and here we're talking about in hagrama in Shechita hatoyas hasakin. Here also he has to be mate the mido litovaso for the benefit of the lokeach. And if the makom, if the minigam makom was not to be machriya during the actual shkila, the weighing, then he has to add something subsequently, which will give the lokeach the extra domim, the value of that hatoyas tefach. And how much is that amount? What is that value? So the Mishnah says, echad la sora bilach, the echad li esrim biyovish. So for example, in the case of lach, the classical weight is called a log, and he would have to add echad la sora, which means 10%, of the log. That's what he's going to have to add. Now, what does that mean? She Yosef Asiras Lug Al Kol Asara Lugim. In other words, the way the Rashbam interprets this, it's not 10%, but rather it's 1%. And why is that? Because the Rashbam is insisting that he's going to have to add 1/10 of a lug for 10 lugim, which is the equivalent of 1%. Okay? And Tosfos agrees in this case with the Rashbam. By the way, when it says Echad li Esrim biyavesh, the Mishnah is offering a different shear of how much Tosefis he has to add to the Lokech in the case of dry goods, and that's going to be Echad li Esrim, 1 out of 20 of a litra. Let's say litra is a scale for dry. So on every 20 litra, he's going to have to add 1/20. So 1/20 of 20 is 1 over 400. So whereas the ratio in the case of liquids is 1 over 100, in the case of dry goods, it's 1 over 400. And the Gemara is going to have a suffix about this later on, and it's going to end up with a teku. When the Mishnah said, Echad li Esrim biyavesh, is it the way we explained it, 1 over 400? Well, perhaps it means 1 over 200. And the Mishnah means, it's a hemshek what it wrote before, Echad li Esrim balach. In any event, we'll get to that teku in a few minutes, B'ezer Hashem. But basically, we can summarize by saying that in the case of liquids, he adds 1 over 100. In the case of solids, he adds 1 over 400. By the way, how does the Rashbam know that the Mishnah doesn't mean 1 over 10 in the case of lach? Because then it should have said Echad me'asara, not Echad le'asara. That was the diuk of the Rashbam. Now the Mishnah continues with regard to weighing and measuring. B'makom shenagu lamud bedaka. And here we talk about a measurement called a kav. So a person is selling to his friend, to the buyer, a sa'a. And the minig is to measure out with a mida daka, which means that each kav is going to be measured unto itself. Now, what this is all about, and what does it mean that a mida daka is to weigh each kav? The answer is, a mida daka is a small measure that contains a kav. A large measure, which is called in the Lashon HaMishnah a mida gasa, is used for a seah. And a seah is 6 kavs. We've discussed this earlier. So it means that what we learned here, that there's a requirement on the part of the seller to offer to the buyer a hachras tefach on each weighing, then if he weighs the whole thing in one fell swoop, the entire volume, then the recipient, in this case the buyer, is going to lose as a result, because he's going to get only one hachras tefach for the entire volume. So therefore, this minog in certain places, certain locations, was to offer this hachras tefach by weighing smaller amounts more frequently. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that there are makomos where the minog was to always use a mida gasa, and that's the larger measure, and not to use lo yomid bedaka. Because in that case, if he uses the small measure and he's going to be measuring it constantly, then the achras tefach will cause an undue, unjustified loss to the mocher. Then the Mishnah goes on to establish that a person should not change from the minhag makom, and therefore makom shenagu limchok, the Mishnah says, means liyasher al pi amida lahaser agodesh kadesh tishar akamas mitzumtzemes bediuk. So limchok means liyasha, which means to flatten it out and or level it out. And the word yigdosh means when there's a heap, you know, it goes up and extends beyond. So if the minhag makom is limchok, which means they flatten it out on top. Lo yigdosh, he shouldn't heap up this mida and then sell it. Even if the buyer is willing to pay extra money, or for example, the seller is willing to be mochel, nevertheless, you're not allowed to do that. And the flip side is that if the minhag is ligdosh, to add to the kli mida a heap on top, lo yimchok, you shouldn't level it out and flatten it. Even if the lokech is going to pay less for that, or he's mochel, li olam, as an absolute universal requirement, the medida should be in accordance with the minhag, with the minhag hamedina. And the reason for all this is, the Gemara explains later on Daf Pei Tes, Anoshim Yiru Es HaMedida, the onlooker, the spectator, sees the way he's measuring it out. He doesn't know that he added extra money, meaning that the Lokech is playing more because it was heaped, or the Mocher is charging the Lokech less damim because it's flat. He doesn't know that, and therefore he comes to suspect there's some ramos, there's some cheating and gezel going on here, and that's not allowed. So therefore there has to be an absolute standard of and requirement to the way we go about measuring things and so forth. That's what it has to be. Now, I have here a note on the discussion in the Mishnah about lo yomud bedaka, that if the minig of that particular medina, that makom, is to use gasa, to use the larger scales for a seah that's six times the volume of the smaller scales of the kav, then the Mishnah says lo yomud bedaka. And the note here points out, in the name of the Rashbam, that this is a discussion in the Mishnah that applies even to Midas Nofech. Now, it's not just weight, but also the Nofech means the area. In other words, some places are noig to be modeid, they measure with a Mida Gasa, lo yachluk es akamas lemedidos ktanos. So that if a certain volume is usually weighed out, that's what has to be weighed out. The Gemara now goes on to analyze the basic principle of the Mishnah and try to find a source for this halach of Ein Shokel B'maznayim B'shavel Itzorch Latosav, this din of Hachroas Tefach, where does it come from? And the Gemara says, Minani Mili, Omrei Shlokish, Diomar Kro, we're going back to our Pasuk, in Parshas Ki Tetzi, it says, Even Shlema Vitzedek Yeloch. And since it says Even Shlema, that's precise, the word Vitzedek, the extra word, is superfluous. Once I know it's got to be Shlema, it's got to be Kitikuna, why did the Pasuk add the word Tzedek? And it must be teaching us that even though the Midos are Shaveh, nevertheless, tzadeik mishalcha v'tein lo, give him some extra above and beyond what he, al pidin, has rights to demand. And how do you do so? By being machriya the shkila litovaso shel ha shel alokeach. And that's called tzadeik mishalcha v'tein lo. And it would seem Pashtus in this Gemara of Reish Lakish that we're talking about some sort of Gzeiras HaKosev over here. And what that means is that we derive a halacha from the word Vitzedek. Now, after the word Vitzedek, it says Yeh Lach. And that means that Lach means Tevater Mishalcha, give up something of your own. And in general, with regard to midos, a person should do that, and that's the way he treats his friend. He's always machria litova, and David HaMelech says in Tehillim, "Mi chacham v'yishmar elav yisbonu chazdei Hashem, mi sheyishmar al midosav al yidei achra yireh chazdei Hashem b'mishkal zchuyosav." That's God will treat him, says the Ben Ish Chai, the way he treats his fellow man. And God will be mata bechesed, all the zchuyot of a person, adding to his zchuyot in a divine compassion, just the same way that he does it towards his fellow Jew. And again, this requirement of Hachra, as we said before, applies even to Midas Nofech. And the way the Rashbam has it, Yesh Lim Dod Berevach, the Ofen Shakoni Yikabu Miat Yosem Mividoso, he'll get a little bit more of the Midas Nofach than he really is bargaining for and paying for. In any event, the question here that the Mefarshim raises, why can't we use this pasuk even as far as the kone is concerned? As far as the buyer, maybe he should also be mevater and mishalo and tenlo and give to the mocher. Why is it that the mocher always has to be the one who's giving to the lokeach? In any event, the Gemara raises a different objection. Ihochi, if the din of our Mishnah, you need akras tefach, is a din Torah, it's a doraisa halach derived from the pasuk, game of sefer. How do we learn the rest of the Mishnah, the last part of the Mishnah? Shokolo ayin ba'ayin, nosen lo gerumin. In other words, if at the time of the weight he used an exact shavah b'shavah and he wasn't machriya, then he has to add some extra money, or value, I should say, on the midah. He says, "V'yachra doraisa hechi yoev le'ayin b'ayin." How did this happen? That in the process of weighing it, he weighed it shavah b'shavah. And even though later on he adds a certain value, but nevertheless he violates the din Torah that's halacha in the shkila, in the very weighing. So therefore, the Gemara comes back now and reinterprets the drasha of Reish Lakish. As if Reish Lakish is interpreting the Sefer. The Gemara says, Ela Reisha b'makom shenagu. That the Reisha of our Mishnah is not establishing a hardcore, absolute rule requiring Hachra b'shash shkila. It's not a din Torah, but rather it's a makom shenagu came. That was the accepted custom in that particular location. The Mishnah wants to teach us that if that's the minigam makom, then it becomes an absolute obligation and he cannot deviate from the minigam makom. And the Gemara is going to later on, Adaf Peites, derive this from the pasuk, Even Shlema Vitzedek Yielcha. But in any event, the Gemara now goes on to say, V'chi Yidma de Reish Lakish, the drush of Reish Lakish of Tzadek Mishalcha V'teinlo, was not said with regard to the Achra and the Reisha, but rather on the Asefa Itmar with regard to the Seifa, where it says, Hayashokilo Ayin Be'ayin Osen La Girumin. And on this halacha, we have to ask the question, Minani Mili. In other words, if he didn't do the Achra Stefach at the time of the Shkil, he has to add afterwards, subsequently, Amar Reish Lakish. This is derived from the pasuk that says Evan Shlema, the Yomakra Evan Shlema Vatzedek, the extra word Vatzedek means Sadek Mishalcha V'teinlo. That you're really digging into your pocket, Mr. Mocher, in order to make up the difference and give him some extra. And again, this whole discussion applies, as we'll soon see in the Gemara and the Braisa later on in Peites, B'makom Shalona Gulachriya. In a place where there's no, if the meaning of makom was lachria, and you give it to Tosefes in the shkila itself through hakras tefach, then he's got to give him that hakras tefach, that extra amount b'shash shkila. But now, when the Braisa says sadeik mishalcha v'teinlo subsequent to the shkila, that's only a makom shalonagu lehakria b'shash shkila. And therefore he has to give over that extra amount, and it's equivalent to the Akras Tefach afterwards, subsequent to the Shkila. And the Gemara says, V'kama, and how much does he have to add? Gerumin. Again, it's a little bit unclear. What is the Gemara exactly asking here when it says, V'kama Gerumin? V'kama is this Gerumin? How much is this Gerumin? You know, the Mishnah itself gave the answer to that question, whether it's 1 over 100, 1 over 400. But in any event, the Gemara answers, Omer Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal Marav, Echon me'asara belitra belach la'asara litrin, which, as we discussed before, is a matter of 1 over 100. Well, we're going to see exactly how the Gemara is going to be mistopic about this in just a minute. We're talking about 1 over 100 in the case of liquids. And And that's what he has to add in lieu of the Hachras Tefach, because he didn't do the Hachras Tefach. There was no such minog. And Echad li'asar v'lach v'echad li'esrim v'yavesh, the amount of the commodity that has to add in lieu of the Hachras Tefach is, in the case of lach, 1/100. Now the Gemara is going to analyze how much of a percentage does he have to add in the case of a davar yavesh, of dry commodities. Boiluhu hechi ka'amar. What does the Mishnah really mean when it says in the case of yavesh, echad li esrim biyavesh? Do we assume that the words echad me asara, which are written in the Mishnah, that's only with regard to lach, and then the Mishnah is saying that echad me asara b'lach le'asara de'lach, which is again 1/100, because it's 1/10 to 10. And then in the case of yavesh, echad me esrim b'yavesh, which means le'esrim b'yavesh, which is 1/400. O dilma, shall we say that when it says echad me asara, in the case of lach, then that relates also to li'esrim diyavesh, and therefore it means 1/10. The shear of Tosefis is la'sar delach vehein v'li'esrim diyavesh. Dilma means that echad me'asar 1/10 of a litra le'asara delach, that means per 10 litros of liquid commodities, li'esrim diyavesh, and per 20 litres of dry commodities, which would mean that the fraction here is going to be 1/200. And the Gemara doesn't come to any definite conclusion, but rather, teku. Rashbam tries to explain to us why is it there's a distinction here between liquid commodity and dry commodity. After all, the Torah says in both cases, sadek mishal chavetein lo, and the answer is that in the case of lach, then lo over hakol mikliya medina lekliya kona v'hari nishar davuk. It's more likely that in the case of liquids that there'll be a lot of residue that congealed in the walls of the kli. Mashenke biyavesh rak ma'at nishar davuk. There's very limited volume of congealed dry substance. Therefore, although in both cases it's sadek mishchal v'tainlo, but how much does he have to add? In the case of lach, he has to add much more than in the case of yavesh. Now at this point, the Gemara quotes an agadita with regard to this whole avera of imprecise measurements. Amar Rab Levi, kasha onsham shel midos, yoser me onsham shel arayos. This is a very surprising Gemara, that the severity of the violation with regard to midos exceeds that of immorality. And how does Rav Levi know such a thing? Shezeh, in the case of Arayos, Nemar Behem, the Torah says in Vayikra Yudches, Ki Eskal Tovevos Ha'el, notice there are only two letters here, Ha'el, Aleph Lamed, Asu Anshe Aretz Hashel Lefneichem, so Arayos is called Aleph Lamed, Vizeh, but in the case of Midos, Nemar Bahem, the Torah says, and I'll read the whole Pasuk, this is in Dvarim Chafhei, Ki Soavas Hashem Lekech Kol Osei Eile, that's Aleph Lamed Hey, and the Pasuk therefore in the case of Midos adds the extra Hey. So the Ramos, cheating in Midos, is more Chomer than that of Arayos, and that justifies the extra Hey. The Gemara asks the following question, Umay, how do you know mashma, that it implies the high El, that the word El is a lashon of koshehu, and therefore you derive it that in the case of the Toveivos of Arayos, El is the word that describes the Chomer Avera, and the Gemara says the Chsiv, because it says in Yechezkel, when Yechezkel prophesies about what the king of Bavel is going to do when he gets to Yerushalayim, he writes, V'es Eile Ha'aretz Lokach. Eile means the Shtarka, the Chazakim, the Tkifim. So the word El always means Chozek. Like when we speak about Elohim, we speak about Elohim as Chozek, as the mighty God.
So when it says HaTo'evas HaEl in the parish of Arias, it's teaching us how kosher, how difficult and strong and powerful are these To'evos, are these abominations. And therefore we know that To'evas HaEl in the case of Midos is also referring to the severity of the crime, and here it's even worse because there's an extra letter Hey, and it says Eila. Now the Marsha in his Chidushim on Agados explains why did the Torah choose the letter Hey in the case of Midos to indicate how abominable this Avera is. Any extra letter Lechora should have served the same purpose, and he explains that it's very difficult to do tshuva in the case of scales. You don't know exactly who you have to repay. And in Masechta Menachos on Daf Chav Tes and Beis, the Gemara darshins from the pasuk Eile Toldo Shamayim Vars Behi Bar Am, and the Gemara says Al Tikra Behi Bar Am Ela Behei Bar Am, and the Torah is coming to tell us that this world was created with the letter He. And in this letter, there's a pasach lemata and a pasach lemala. Behei bar'am. And so too, says the Marsha, a human being in this world has freedom of choice. If he wants, he can fall to the bottom, that's the pasach lemata, or he can do tshuva, and he could go up to the pasach lemala. There's a pasach on top of the hibaram, both underneath it and on top of it. Again, you have to know more about the Masorah for that. And therefore, the Tosefes of the letter Hey Bedafka is a remez on Inyani Tshuva, telling us how difficult it is to do tshuva in the case of Mishkolos. The Gemara now asks, how can you derive the conclusion that the Avera of Midos is more chomer than Arayos from the extra Hey of Eileh? Because in Arayos it always says El without the Hey. When Gabi Arayas Namiksiv, the Torah says Eile in the parish in the context of Arayas, it says Kikol Ashayasa Mikol Toevas Ha Eile Venikrusu Anafash Sos. So we have the extra Hey of Eila even in Arayas. And the Gemara answers Ahu, that pasuk that utilizes the word Eila in the parish in the context of Arayas is not coming to teach us the Chomer Havera, but rather Limute Midos Mikares. In other words, when a person cheats because of his imprecise Midos, which is called Toevos, as we saw, the word Toeva is used even in the context of Midos Tovos, of imprecise Midos, because it says Ki Toevos Hashem Kekolos Eile, then we could have made a mistake that when the Torah says Kol Asher Yasa Mikol HaToevos in the parasha of Arayos, then it says V'nichusu Nefasha Osos Bekeram, that there is a Chi of Kares. We might have applied that even to the pasuk in Midos. The Torah adds the word Ela as a mute to exclude the case of imprecise weights from the punishment of Kares. And this is a pretty mind-boggling sugya because it comes out that there's a serious havamin that for this Avera, which is called an abomination in the Torah, of using imprecise midos, the punishment should be Kares. But the word Ela comes as a mute. The Gemara then asks, V'ela mai odfaihu? So now, apparently, these immoral relationships have some sort of adifus, meaning some sort of extra severity, because there's only kares in the case of Arias and not in the case of false midos. So how do we understand this concept that the punishment of the Avera for false Midos is in some sense more severe? And what does that mean? Because in the case of Arayis we have Kares, there's no Kares in the case of Midos. And the Gemara answers, no, the extra severity in the case of Midos is not the punishment per se, but rather the Hasam Efshar B'tshuva V'Hachal Lo Efshar B'tshuva. In other words, in the case of immoral relationships, you can certainly do tshuva, But in the case of false or imprecise scales, then you don't even know, you don't know who you cheated. You don't have a calculated, you know, list of who you cheated. You know, they say about the Chofetz Chaim Zichron Levrach that he would, that he would, you know, check every single sefer for the Mishnah Berurah before he sold it, that maybe there'd be some page that's missing and he might be guilty of cheating the buyer. But in any event, we should make mention here that the Gemara in Masechta Bava Kamma on Daf Tzadi Dalid Amid Beis says that in a case where you stole from a whole group of people, or from one person from a group, then he should actually do something for the benefit of the public. You know, he should build some waterways in order to somehow guarantee that he'll pay back the one person that he stole from, that he cheated from. And again, you know, it's not really, it's the best alternative of all of them, but it's not really complete kapara, because it doesn't ensure that the person is going to get back what he lost, what was stolen from him. So again, even though in the case of Arias the punishment is more severe, namely kares, and the penalty for false weights is not as severe, it's not kares, but nevertheless, since it's going to be very difficult for the avarion in the case of false weights to do tshuva, then in some sense the punishment might be even more severe down the line because he hasn't been able to do tshuva. The Omer Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi further speaks about the severity of different sins. Kasha gezel hejot yosem mi gezel gavoa. A common case of gezel is even more chamur than stealing from Hegdesh, which is called Me'ilah. Why? Shezeh hikdim chet le'me'ilah, v'zeh hikdim me'ilah le'chet. He's going back to the psukim here. And when the Torah speaks about an individual kind of theft, the Torah says that the gazlan is in violation of a sin, and it hasn't even yet mentioned the me'ilah element. Whereas in the case of Hegdesh, it says me'ilah first and then chet second. So let's just see some of the psukim that Rabbi Levi is referring to. In the case of gzela, the Torah in Vayikra Perkei says, nefesh ki sechta u'mol amal ba'ashem v'kichesh ba'miso v'pikonim b'tzumusiyada o b'gezel. So the word chet comes first and me'ilah comes second. However, in the case of Me'ilah of Hegdesh, it says, Nefesh, in the same parish, it says, Nefesh ki simol mal v'chata b'shkoga mikodshe Hashem. So there, the Me'ilah comes before Chet. So that's the contrast between the two structures of these respective psukim. Now, if let's say Reuven takes a shavua in which he denies he denies owing money, then in such a case, the chet comes first. The Torah wants to emphasize the chet here, the sin of the sinner. And, you know, at this stage, he really hasn't consummated his me'ilah. In other words, already when he's kofir b'pikadon, and he denies the possession of some sort of item that belongs to someone else, he hasn't really used it for his own purposes yet, which is me'ilah. He hasn't misappropriated, but the very kfira in Bezdin of the claim against him is already considered a chet. In the case of Hegdesh, the avera is conditional. It's only called a chet if he's first moel. In other words, he has some sort of benefit. He's nene from Hegdesh. So in that sense, says the Rashbam, the avera for gzela in the case of mamon hejot is even more severe, because we don't even have to wait until the gazlan enjoys the benefit of the misappropriated object. He's already guilty of chet before me'ilah, whereas in the case of hegdesh, the avera is conditional on the me'ilah. The me'ilah comes first and the chet comes later. And basically because in the case of personal gzela, the gzela is itself the possession, you know, owning or taking the object from the nigzal and that he does through the Kfir in Bezdin is itself an act of Gzela. But in the case of Hegdesh, then wherever the object is, it's in the Rishus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So at what point is he called a sinner is when he derives benefit from the object. That's how the Marsha explains this Gemara. The Omer Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi says, Bo re'esh lo k'midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas Basar v'dom HaKadosh Baruch Hu Berach Yisrael b'yesev u'shtayim v'kilom b'shmona. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, out of his compassion for the people of Israel, blesses the people of Israel, he uses 22 letters, we'll soon count them, whereas when he curses the people of Israel, he only uses 8 letters, indicating that the curse is so much less severe than the bracha. And now, how do we see this? And for this, we have to open up the Chumash to Vayikra Chaf Vav, which in Parshas Bechukosai is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessing, and it begins with Im Bechukosai Telechu, meaning with the letter Aleph, which is the first letter of the alphabet, and it concludes with the Olech Eschem Komemius, the last letter of which is a Tav, and these are the 22 letters of the Aleph base. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to maximize all the letters and utilize them all in order to be Mevarech Klal Yisrael, but in the same parasha, we have the Tochacha in Bechukosai, and that begins with the letter of Ve'im Bechukosai, which is a Vav. The Kol of Ve'im Bechukosai Tim'asu ends with the S Chukosai Ga'ala Nafsham, which means that it starts with a Vav and ends with a Mem. Now, if you go through the letters of the Aleph base, from Vav to Mem, there are exactly 8 letters. So again, even though in the Tochacha the curses are very detailed, very scary, and they're stretched out, but actually, according to the Marsha's interpretation, they're far narrower in scope because it starts with the Vav and ends with the Mem. Now, before we get to Kisavo, we take a look again in the statement of Rabbi Levi, and he writes the following. He says, Bircham b'yesrim v'shtayim me'im b'chukosad komemius, from the Aleph to the Tav. And that's the 22 letters. And kilon b'shmone me'im b'chukosad timasu ad v'es chukosad gola nafshon. Because from the beginning of the klola with a Vav, we get to the end of the klola with a Mem, and that's 2 letters that are separated by 8 letters in between. V'ilu Moshe Rabbeinu. And now we're contrasting Midas Basar Adam to Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu also bestows brachos and klolos. But in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, Birchan B'shmona, just the reverse, V'kilon B'yesem V'shtayim. And why is that so? So the Gemara explains, Birchan B'shmona, and here we are on Pei Tes Amud Aleph, Mivahoya Im Shamoa Tishma Ad Li'avdam. And that means that you start with a. This is in Dvarim Perek Chaf Dalet. So you start with the Vav of the Haya, and you end with Le'avdam, which is the letter Mem at the end of the word Le'avdam. And when you start with the Vav and end with the Mem, as we said earlier, you're talking about 8 letters that separate the Vav from the Mem. And that's the bracha of Hayim Shema. However, in the case of Klola, B'yesrim V'shtayim, you start with V'hoya Im Lo Tishma, and you end up with V'ein Kone. And in this case then, the curses begin with the letter Vav of V'hoya, but ends with the letter He of V'ein Kone. Okay, now how does that give us 22 letters from Vav to He? And the answer is that you're basically going around the entire alphabet from the Vav and swinging to the end of the alphabet to Tav, and then going back to the Aleph in order to arrive at the He. So there, that's the number 22 letters. And this indicates that
Hashem, in contrast to Moshe, has the benevolence that when those who live up to his demands and fulfill his will and his commandments, then God's benevolence is that much greater than his anger towards those who, chas v'shalom, reject God. And in the case of Moshe, however, the curse in Moshe's rabbinic for those who reject the commandments is going to be, shall we say, greater or more severe than the blessing for those who obey him. So there's a subtle difference here. The 22, which is Hashem's bracha, goes according to the sequence of the Aleph Beis. And when God conveys a blessing, in his own words, then he's following the proper sequence of letters. Now, if we go now to Moshe Rabbeinu in his 22, which is the curse of Moshe, here, things are out of order. Because again, we started with the hay and ended back, we started with the vav and ended back with the hay. And the Marsha makes a big deal about this because he wants to say that in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessings, then there's a very great blessing that's all-encompassing the entire alphabet. But not only that, the benefits are in a certain definite sequence, which means that when Hashem manifests and bestows his goodness and his grace upon the people of Israel through bracha, then when he does so, it's some sort of a logical sequence which leads ultimately from the Aleph through the Tav to some fulfillment at the pinnacle. But in contrast, in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu's klolos, there's a broad-ranging 22 letters, but there's not some sort of sequence. The sequence of a klolo would be from worse to worse, you know, from ever worse to more worse. But that's not going to be the case, and there won't be some sort of ultimate downfall. And that's why in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu's klola, the letters are really reversed. We're going from vav to hey. And the Marsha wants to add that vav to hey indicates that ultimately when Klal Yisrael will be chosa b'tshuva, these klolos will be turned around. Because again, the letters are turned around here, they're in the opposite sequence. And now the close will become bros. Okay, now at this point, the Gemara here on the top of Peites is going to return to our Mishnah, and that's where we're going to stop for now.